Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Talal Halal, MD, MB, BCH, a hematologist-oncologist in the Department of Hematology at Mayo Clinic in Phoenix, Arizona, who joined us to discuss the chronic lymphocytic leukemia treatment landscape. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Halal discussed data with frontline ibrutinib, acalabrutinib, and zanubrutinib in CLL, remaining uncertainties regarding the use of BTK inhibitors to manage this disease, and how a patient's minimal residual disease status influences their subsequent treatment options. Thank you so much again for taking the time to speak with me today about frontline therapy in CLL. Could you just describe how BTK inhibitors compare with chemotherapy in the first-line treatment of CLL?
Now we have long-term data for BTK inhibitors in the frontline setting, and clearly for young and older patients with comorbidities, they improve progression-free survival compared to things like FCR or BR. And there's also signals of maybe improved overall survival in young patients treated with ibrutinib versus FCR. I think the big things that come up is, you know, one is continuous therapy, the other one is usually just a few months. But with that in mind, you know, clearly they do have better efficacy and probably better safety profile in general.
What is the significance of the long-term follow-up data from the RESONATE 2 trial with ibrutinib?
You know, I think it tells us a few things. It clearly is effective for a long period of time. At a 7-year period, there's a progression-free survival of about 60%. So there's a substantial people who are in remission on therapy, but there's also a substantial that end up having to stop therapy for various reasons, approximately half after that long follow-up period. And so that can be from toxicity. And I think it talks a lot about the difficulty in maintaining patients on this for a long period of time. Clearly, RESONATE 2 had issues in terms of the comparator arm of chlorambucil. And so it's not a surprise that there's also a improvement in efficacy there compared to chlorambucil. And that was sustained over a long period of time. There was crossover allowed, and that did happen in a substantial portion of patients. And we still see an overall survival benefit there with ibrutinib. So, you know, I think it just kind of speaks to long-term tolerability and efficacy for the treatments. But that's probably all I would take out of it.
What has the ELEVATE-TN trial shown about the benefits of acalabrutinib in this setting?
There's a couple of things. It was a 3-arm trial. The control arm was still chlorambucil-based. And so to me, the bigger question was whether addition of obinutuzumab to acalabrutinib versus just single-agent BTK inhibitor would add a benefit. You know, we've seen with the ibrutinib trials, the addition of rituximab in the frontline setting didn't really yield much benefit. And so this trial did show a signal of maybe slight improvement in PFS with the addition of obinutuzumab to acalabrutinib. It's hard to, based on that trial by itself, reach any conclusions about the efficacy of acalabrutinib versus ibrutinib, but it's certainly introduced another option for the frontline therapy and opened up a window to use anti-CD20 therapy coupled with acalabrutinib. When you think about head-to-head trials of acalabrutinib versus ibrutinib, I think that was a little bit more useful in trying to glean some data regarding safety.
What might be some benefits seen with potential head-to-head trial comparisons of acalabrutinib, ibrutinib, and zanubrutinib in this setting?
Yeah, I mean, so the ELEVATE-RR trial compared acalabrutinib with ibrutinib is a non-inferiority design. And basically proved that both are equivalent in efficacy and that acalabrutinib is not inferior to ibrutinib. It also showed that it's safer from a cardiac standpoint. That plus ELEVATE-TN made us probably shift towards using acalabrutinib in the frontline setting for most patients. Now, whether that's adding obinutuzumab to it or not is somewhat of an open-ended question. I think there are preferences for different people. Zanubrutinib has been compared recently at least the data has been published recently in the Alpine trial with ibrutinib in the relapse refractory setting. There's data in the frontline setting with Sequoia that's not comparing zanubrutinib with another BTK. It's compared to chemoimmunotherapy. And so I think there are some interesting results coming out of Alpine to suggest that maybe zanubrutinib is better in the relapse refractory setting from a PFS standpoint and an overall response rate compared to ibrutinib. I don't know if that will translate to better efficacy compared to acalabrutinib, which is now probably more often used in the frontline setting. We'll wait to see if it gets the approval. It has been approved in Europe now, and so it probably is coming here soon for CLL.
Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about regarding ibrutinib plus venetoclax in the frontline setting?
I mean, there's a lot of trials ongoing, some results presented at the recent ASH and previous meetings, and there's some data published also in journals. Many of these were phase two single-arm studies, and now we have some randomized studies as well. The main one I would mention that came out of ASH is the GLOW trial that basically showed that the three-year PFS with the combination is about 70 to 80%. Cross-trial comparisons are imperfect, but I think if you look at the same time points, when you look at venetoclax-based treatments, you see the same kind of three-year PFS. It makes sense to combine ibrutinib with venetoclax. We need to see if it's really better than using venetoclax with anti-CD20. Both are designed to be finite amount of treatment, so 1 or 2 years, and then stop versus just single agent BTK, which is usually designed to be continuous. I'm seeing that maybe the combination is not as superior to maybe venetoclax-based treatment. And so, you know, I think that kind of opens up an option, perhaps, for the frontline or relapse refractory setting in patients who want finite therapy. But I think it's going to take some time to see whether that really translates to better PFS or OS compared to venetoclax-based treatments.
What is the importance of testing patients for minimal residual disease after frontline treatment?
The topic of MRD has come up a lot now in many different hematologic malignancies. It's basically prognostic. I think people who achieve undetectable MRD and across the board for different malignancies, not just CLL, they tend to have better prognosis. Now, the question becomes, those who don't achieve undetectable MRD, do they need any further treatment? We have situations where patients are in remission clinically and still have detectable MRD, and they can stay in remission for quite a long time. We know from, again, the RESONATE-2 trial, very long-term follow-up with continuous therapy, people rarely achieve undetectable MRD, but are still in remission, you know, 7, 8 years later. And so I think it's a good endpoint to look at when you're thinking about stopping therapy, perhaps. But I think there's a lot we need to learn about the utility of doing it in clinical practice and whether it really changes treatment right now. I think it's part of many of the clinical trial designs that are ongoing. And so there's going to be a little bit more that we're going to find out about its utility in the real world, you know, over the coming years.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about that you were excited to hear come out of this year's ASH meeting?
Yeah, I think the bigger thing was Alpine. Response rate data was presented before, and now we have PFS data showing zanubrutinib is superior to ibrutinib from a PFS standpoint. It is safer as well from a cardiac toxicity profile standpoint. And so I would expect an approval soon, at least in the relapse refractory setting and perhaps the frontline setting as well. So it's going to make us probably debate what BTK inhibitor to start patients on. I think it probably is going to be interesting to see this BTK inhibitor specifically being used in practice and seeing a little bit more data with multi-center retrospective studies as it's being adopted more.
Looking to the future, is there any ongoing CLL research at Mayo Clinic that you're excited about?
I mean, we have a combination of, you know, industry-sponsored trials available at different settings of CLL treatment, and we have, you know, a few IITs and in-house CAR-T studies, certainly in Rochester, that are targeting high-risk populations. So I think there's a few interesting areas that, in general, not just for Mayo Clinic, but across the board, I think there are a few populations in CLL that really need better therapies. The biggest one being patients who are double refractory to BTK and BCL2 inhibitors. And so we have a few trials ongoing here for that. Another question is, should we be treating patients earlier if they have high-risk disease, or should we just wait? And so I think randomized studies in that setting would be helpful as well. And some of those are ongoing and are hopefully going to be available for patients in the coming months.
Is there anything else that you'd like to speak about regarding this topic that we haven't already touched on?
I think CLL has, as a field, has changed significantly just, even in the last 5 years with the introduction of these agents. And the bigger things we need to figure out as we start using those agents more is sequencing, time-limited therapy. What is the utility of MRD in terms of whether it can be used as a marker of stopping therapy or even continuing therapy? And I think there's a little bit more to learn, but things are looking better overall.
Thank you so much again for taking the time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.